Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. Yes, solidarity forever. This is Solidarity Breakfast and this is Annie and Matt. Hello.
Good, I'm well. How are you, Annie?
I'm good. It's pretty ordinary out there in terms of weatherland. So that's the weather report. One thing you should be looking out for is lots of roadworks. All night, people have been working on the tram lines and on the roads, and they're everywhere. So there you go. You were sleeping in your bed. There were people out there who were awake all night doing maintenance jobs across the tramway system. And I can swear to that because there's one right near me. And every time I woke up, they were still working away. So let's hope they sleep well during the day.
Yeah, let's hope they get some much needed rest.
Exactly. really, a lot of things have happened during the week, as usual, but a piece of really happy news came, and that is that David McBride, the whistleblower who was put in jail for doing the right thing, telling the world that Australian troops were killing prisoners in Afghanistan. He was put in jail for not revealing the truth so much as being not being allowed to reveal classified information. It was it's not the information that was important. It was the fact that he was employed by the army and he wasn't allowed to actually tell people something as heinous as war crimes were being committed in Australia's name. Anyway, he did serve 2 years. And he's had many vocal supporters. There was an appeal process going on that didn't squash the sentence, but his parole period has arrived and he has been let out of prison. So that is actually a good news story.
That is great news.
Yeah, that's
really,
right.
Really good news.
The other one, I guess, is the enormous amount of school students, I must say they're not voters, but they are the future generation, rallied against Hanson over the week in all different parts of the country.
Yeah, Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. Large contingents of students.
Yeah.
I think we did hear some the typical dronery from some politicians that they should be at school. I saw something quickly on Thursday where Pauline Hanson's flunky, who left the National Party, his name escapes me at the moment, and I'm sorry.
One with the red head.
No, he used to be Barnaby Joyce.
Yeah.
Made statements like, they must be influenced by socialist teachers. But I think what's missing here is that this sort of activism has been happening at schools for quite some time, for at least a decade, and it stemmed from concern over climate collapse.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah. And it's been suggested by some pundits that these young'uns are not apathetic when it comes to politics; they're just over capitalism. I mean, they obviously can put two and two together, and it equals four.
So instead of politicians criticising students for being, you know, politically active, they should actually encourage them to have political consciousness.
Oh, well, it's interesting because it goes back to something that Tabea said last week about the push for the renaming of one of the libraries in the name of
Gaetano Greco.
Greco, because yeah. And one of the standout features of that man was his inclusivity and particularly his fondness and respect for young people, listening to their concerns and talking to them with respect. It's probably something that people in general should emulate. I find it really odd that people don't. Interestingly enough, there's some other things going on. The Salvos accused the Melbourne City Council Council Mayor Nick Rees of breaking his election promise of $6 million to the Salvation Army's homeless services and $3.2 million to Melbourne City Mission for the same. This is reported in The Age. Neither of the organisations have received any of this money. Rees, who appears to have caught the Labor Party politician's disease of saying something that seems to mean one thing and then doing the complete opposite, will remember already under a cloud for pushing the safe city agenda at the cost of millions to hire safety officers with the specific aim of removing homeless people and removing their belongings. Reports from homeless people thus affected include confiscation of belongings, removal to distant suburbs without supports and disrespect. The Age reports Rees saying, "We are in ongoing dialogue with the Salvation Army to ensure that the service they provide is done in a way which doesn't present any additional risks to people who run businesses or live at or visit that end of the city." So if Rees's credentials as the progressive was ever in doubt, the adage, "It walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it is a duck," should definitely be applied to support homeless services, support the Homeless Persons Union and their work raising the service bar for unhoused people through advocacy. Completely outed. Nick Rees, mayor of, that's his agenda and that was why he stood, it would appear. I wanted to talk about something which is completely different, which is Monash-led research has revealed that one in 10 butterfly species globally has shifted its distribution range with climate change and extreme weather driving nearly 80% of documented movements, which is quite a fascinating thing to think that the butterflies are our litmus test for the climate change effects that are going on. The study, the largest of its kind, analysed 6,182 range shift records for 1,758 species across 105 countries, drawing on English and non-English scientific literature, as well as 68 expert assessments. Lead author, Dr. Shoran Chowdhury, head of the Global Change Ecology Lab from Monash University School of Biological Science, says the findings expose a rapidly changing natural world and major blind spots in how biodiversity change is monitored. If you didn't get a chill from that sort of report, I don't know what should be a chilling aspect to it all. "We urgently need coordinated global monitoring, especially in the tropics, to understand what species are doing, where they're going, and how we can protect them. This is particularly important to meet the Cumna Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework targets." There you go.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit hard to take in, but that news item takes me back to many years ago when I was a youngster, and I remember, I think I was in year 10, my science teacher actually spoke about climate change and actually spoke in the context of the rapid pace of industrialization in London in the late 1890s, that because of all the effects of fog and smoke, that it actually changed the colours of butterflies changed to like black.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. So that they could blend in. You might have noticed that there were some strikes during the week. One of them was the Allied Health Workers. They went on strike for a third time on Tuesday the 11th. A large contingent of Victorian Allied Health Professional Association members, the VAPAR, gathered outside Peter McCallum so that those members usually unable to be part of the rallies because they must keep the system going could join at lunchtime. Despite the mainstream media focusing on wage increases, which are important because Victorian allied health professionals are paid less than their counterparts in other states, the issue of career path progression, workloads and staff retention is part of the claims. Members came from across the state, including Ballarat, Bendigo, the Peninsula, Gippsland, to join their city compatriots. It was a big, noisy rally and people were quite invigorated coming together to put forward the need to save the public health system. I mean, they're talking about them as workers, but actually they're completely committed to maintaining a effective public health system for you, the listeners.
And that news item reminds me of, there's been some coverage over the last week in The Age about problems within the mental health sector. Apparently, a CEO has been appointed from Queensland, and they're like on a fly-in, fly-out basis. There's also a Victorian government report that kind of falsified or underreported how things were actually going in the mental health sector. So this is an ongoing issue.
Well, yeah. There was a planned 3.5-hour strike by Victorian Public Hospital doctors on August the 13th. That was a couple of days after the VAPAR rally. But it was called off at the 11th hour after the state government launched a legal challenge over union notice paperwork. So the industrial action by the Australian Salaried Medical Officers Federation, ASMORF, was postponed for a week. Paperwork got them into trouble, even though they gave them 2 weeks' notice. But the thing that got me was the demands. Pay increase. Doctors are asking for we're talking about public doctors, all those doctors that you meet when you go to the emergency and all that. Pay increase. Doctors are asking for a 30% pay rise over 4 years. Workloads. Union demands include maximum shift lengths of 12.5 hours and 2 consecutive days off per fortnight to fix unsafe hours. Now, get that, put your head around that. Like, they want to have days that are no longer than 12 and a half hours of work straight, and they want to have at least 2 hours, 2 days a fortnight consecutive, so that they can get their heads in place. Like, they can actually have a rest.
Yeah, well, the people that look after you, how can they look after you if they're not feeling well and not resting?
That's just unreal, isn't
it? I just wonder whether, to some extent, it shows that, the caring professions, maybe there's something, some degree of exploitation in there, people taking advantage of people who are looking after others.
Yeah, yeah. I think you might be right. Anyway, like we said, there's been plenty of things happening this week and they're just a few of them. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Matt, and we might go to a message before we go into Voices for Palestine.
Are you ready to get lost in science this National Science Week? We'll join the Lost in Science team for our annual Trivia Night extravaganza at the Birmingham Hotel. Hop, skip and a jump away from 3CR on the corner of Smith and Johnson Streets in Fitzroy. Presented by the Lost in Science team with new and old science questions across a range of topics, picture rounds, group activities and prizes big and small to be won by you and your team. At the Birmingham, corner of Smith and Johnson Streets, Fitzroy. That date again, Monday, 17th of August. To get your tickets, you can look up Lost in Science Trivia 2026 online or head to 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au. Get lost in science during National Science Week.
And you're with Annie and Matt on Solidarity Breakfast. And last night there was a rally outside APRA,
the regulator of people in the medical and nurses.
That's exactly right. Yep. And it was on Lonsdale Street. All these. One thing about going to these rallies is you realise that a whole lot of buildings without any notices on the front, so you don't know what they're for, are actually government buildings. Anyway, 222 Lonsdale Street hides APRA behind its facade, and they joined together. Many people, it was quite a large rally actually. They were, of course, angry that APRA has taken on the IRA definition of anti-Semitism, which conflates criticism of Israel's genocidal behaviours against Palestinians with anti-Jewish sentiment, and then pushing it as part of their framework for adjudicating professional behaviour. Let that sink in. Having a political view is going to stop a medical professional.
And having attended quite a number of Palestine solidarity rallies, this constant theme I've seen from the nurses, midwives, doctors, they've all said advocacy is an important part of their profession. The fact that they advocate for the rights of their patients, and also the fact that the health system in Gaza is effectively destroyed.
That's exactly right.
And they're not allowed to do that in this framework.
Anyway, we went down there and here's some of the voices. Okay, I'm from 3CR. Nurses, midwives, that's your union. I see HACSU's here as well.
Yeah, so we're really lucky. We've had endorsements from like a lot of the healthcare unions and support from them as well. So the Victorian branch of the ANMF, HACSU, the ASU, VICTAS have also endorsed. We've got the CPSU on board, who of course cover the workers themselves that work at APRA as public servants, you know. And we also, I believe also VARPA, the Allied Health Unions, come on board as well. We've had some support from MSAB, so the medical scientists. So it's a really broad coalition of union groups and community groups as well that are coming together to challenge this decision by APRA. Yeah, essentially as healthcare workers, I'm a nurse. You know, we obviously heard that this decision had been made by APRA, so they've adopted the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. You know, anti-Semitism has no place in healthcare, and, you know, APRA has a responsibility to regulate against, you know, discrimination, any threats to public safety, and that goes for all kinds of discrimination. The issue with, you know, this particular definition is that it conflates criticism of the state of Israel with anti-Semitism. And that's a problem because it means that this is actually an overreach. It starts to limit our political speech and our freedom of political expression. You know, healthcare workers should be able to advocate for Palestinian human rights, for the rights of our colleagues in Gaza and in the West Bank, without fearing regulatory action. You know, this is fundamentally about human rights, and I consider it my professional obligation to stand up and be part of that advocacy and to act in solidarity with my Palestinian colleagues. And so I'm really concerned. I think it's also consequential in terms of you know, setting a precedent where like a regulatory authority can make this decision without consulting workers that they cover, without consulting our unions, and then use that decision to limit our political speech. I think that's a really worrying precedent and something that we should be challenging, which is what we're going to do today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our first speaker is going to be Kalimna. Kalimna is a Yorta Yorta Irab registered nurse and co-convener for the rank and file lead of the ANMF Vic Black Caucus.
Firstly, I just want to acknowledge country. This has and always will be Kulin Nation land. And I want to pay my deepest respects to our elders, past and present. Aboriginal people have always stood up against genocide. We have always stood up and spoken out against apartheid. We have always stood up and spoken out about ethnic cleansing. In 1938, Uncle William Cooper, 1938, heard about the atrocities happening in Germany and led a delegation from his home in Footscray to the German consulate in the city to stand up and speak about the atrocities being perpetrated against the Jewish people, our Jewish brothers and sisters. 1938, when Aboriginal people had no rights in this country. We weren't considered human in this country. We stood up for our Jewish brothers and sisters. We raised our voice and marched. And that is what we're doing today for our Indigenous brothers and sisters in Palestine. For the people in Iran, for the people in Lebanon. Because we know colonial imperialism. We know it when we see it. There was no consultation when Justin adopted the IHRA definition. There was no consultation because he knows that we know it is about fear and intimidation. It is about silencing you and silencing me, about silencing nurses, midwives, doctors, speech pathologists, physios, OTs. It is about scaring us into silence, fearing for our registration, how we pay our bills, how we care for our families, and how we contribute to our communities. Because Justin wants to conflate real and legitimate criticism of a genocidal apartheid state with anti-Semitism. We were on the right side of history in 1938, and we are on the right side of history today. We are not afraid, we will not be intimidated, and we will not be silenced. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Lucy. Call Lucy up to talk a little bit about what's happening with the ARPA workers and the solidarity they're extending to us.
Thank you. Friends and comrades, my name is Lucy. I'm an organiser at the Community and Public Sector Union Victoria, organising and representing the workers at ARPRA. I'm proud to be here today alongside health workers, unions and community members standing together against the implementation of the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, a definition that is not fit for purpose and not welcome at ARPRA. A definition designed by those with vested interests. ARPRA is an agency that proclaims that they want the public to have trust and confidence in our regulated health practitioners. But the decision to adopt this definition is eroding trust in that very agency. ARPRA workers are being asked to implement a change that they were not even consulted on. The people who will actually have to interpret and apply these policies, workers with years of experience, institutional knowledge, and expertise have been left out of the conversation. Shame. Shame. They've also been instructed to work from home today and made it very clear that they would be reprimanded if not. Yeah. But they were not offered no reason, no explanation for this decision, and that tells you a bit about how these decision makers operate. ARPRA workers are skilled professionals. They are responsible for making careful, neutral assessments about the safety and conduct of health practitioners, and they should be listened to. We do, in fact, have some of the best healthcare in the world. That is not an accident. It is because we have highly skilled health workers, strong professional standards, and public institutions staffed by people with enormous expertise. We cannot afford to start losing valuable health workers over politically motivated complaints. ARPRA workers should not have to spend their time investigating health workers simply because they have expressed solidarity with Palestinians, victims of genocidal colonization. And this isn't an abstract concern, because when a doctor shows a poster of Palestine in their office and a patient who believes it should be titled Israel makes a complaint to ARPRA, it's frankly a waste of ARPRA's time. ARPRA complaints are serious. They take months, sometimes years, to resolve. those processes should be focused on genuine concerns about patient safety and professional conduct. They should not be weaponized to pursue workers for expressing political views or solidarity with oppressed people. Our members should not be placed in that position. We should not compromise the integrity of these workers by placing them in a position where they are expected to monitor political speech or police contested definitions of anti-Semitism instead of exercising their own professional judgment. It's frankly insulting. They should also not be embarrassed by the work and by the organisation that they work for. But they are ashamed to work for an organisation that has made decisions like this. Our union is here today because ARPRA workers themselves are taking member-driven action. Rank and file members have stood up and said that this matters to them and it matters to the integrity of their work. And when our members stand up, their union stands with them. So today, CPSU Victoria stands alongside Health Workers for Palestine, alongside our comrades in other unions, and alongside ARPRA workers demanding a better approach. We can oppose anti-Semitism without policing political expression. We can stand against racism in all its forms. We can support Palestinian lives and the rights of Palestinian people, and we can protect the integrity of our health regulatory system. ARPRA workers deserve to be heard, respected, and trusted. And health workers deserve to be able to stand in solidarity with oppressed people without fear of being targeted. Because ARPRA workers are not here to regulate people's ideas, they are here to keep our healthcare system safe. Solidarity with ARPRA workers, solidarity with healthcare workers, solidarity to workers everywhere standing up to injustice. The workers united will never be defeated. Free Palestine. Thank you.
So Hannah Thomas is an activist, writer, a former Greens candidate and a survivor of police brutality who experienced this actually speaking out for Palestine. So we're very grateful Hannah could come along. Please give her a warm welcome.
Thank you. I want to acknowledge that we're on stolen Aboriginal land and sovereignty was never ceded. And I want to thank every healthcare worker and everyone who's turned up in solidarity to organize this action here and across the country to send a clear message to the pathetic, cowardly, paper-pushing leadership at APRA. We will stand up to the bullies. We will stop silencing health workers, dump the IHRA definition, and tell the truth. We are fast approaching 3 years of a live stream genocide, 3 years of watching some of the most heinous crimes imaginable, of seeing children blown up, of seeing hospitals demolished, of seeing parents pull their children from the rubble, and I cannot believe we are still having to fight for the right to tell the truth about it. When the dust settles and the history of all this horror is written, people like Dr. Hussam Abu Safia will be remembered as the bravest, most noble people on this planet, a doctor who refused to abandon his patients, even as his hospital was under siege, and even as he was taken away by IDF thugs, and he remains detained and tortured today, all for the crime of trying to save Palestinian children. And alongside that extraordinary courage, history will record the cowardice of institutions like APRA, whose contribution during this genocide was not treating the wounded, not defending doctors being killed and detained, not protecting the Australians who went to Gaza to help, but to scare healthcare workers here from doing anything about it. And not because they, like Dr. Hussam, faced bombs or guns, but simply because they were too scared of a powerful, small, whiny lobby group. What an utterly pathetic role to choose for yourself in history. Now, I'm not a healthcare worker, but I care very deeply about this for two reasons. Firstly, because suppression and repression in one sphere of life affects us everywhere and makes it easier in other spheres. And secondly, because of my experiences last year. This time last year, I was on a panel, funnily enough, about Palestine repression, and Professor Peter McDonald, who's one of the country's most esteemed cardiologists, asked a question which challenged the narrative being pushed by ASIO about anti-Semitic events. And the Zionist lobby had a meltdown. They planted a Murdoch hit piece. They contacted his employers, St. Vincent's and Victor Chang Cardiac Institute. And instead of defending their star cardiologist who had saved thousands of lives over the years, they threw him under the bus and they suspended him. Now, the organizers of that conference and the panelists, myself and others, we started a campaign to save his job, and we were inundated with support, not just from the public, but from nurses who worked with him and doctors and patients who were outraged at what had happened, and we flooded his employers with hundreds of emails, and he was reinstated after 7 weeks. And there was such a clear lesson in all of this that the lobby might have the power and proximity to power and the money, but we have the numbers and we have the people and we're on the right side of history and we have the truth. But also at the time when all of this was happening, I was between eye surgeries thanks to Mossad, MINS and the New South Wales Police. And I remember thinking that I had so much trust and confidence in my surgeon and my nurses, and I would have been so furious and so livid if I was denied access to them, not because of anything that they'd done that was wrong or that caused harm, but simply because a bunch of genocide-supporting lobbyists were upset. But that's what happened to Professor McDonald's patients for 7 weeks, and that's what will happen to patients in this country if APRA takes doctors and nurses off their jobs simply for standing up for Gaza and for Palestine and for their colleagues in Gaza. So that's what's at stake here. It's not just your right to tell the truth, but it's the right of so many patients here to get the best healthcare they deserve. So thank you so much for coming out, and I'm keen to keep coming out and supporting you. So congratulations on all this.
Nurses,
we won't be silent.
Doctors,
we won't be silent.
Healthcare workers,
we won't be silent.
Workers,
we won't be silent.
Excellent.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're with Annie and Matt on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Cam Walker on the line. G'day, Cam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Annie.
Yeah, now Cam, of course, is from Friends of the Earth, and we've got serious business to talk about. The Victorian government, seems to have prime farmland in its sites for the scurry for critical minerals, which seems quite a bizarre sort of approach to the economy, really.
Yeah, it does. And there's multiple things going on. So there was a deal that was done between our Prime Minister and Donald Trump in the USA over critical minerals, and that's going to fast-track some of these projects. There's globally an effort to get more production into countries in the global north, so places like Australia, and that's intended to undermine the Chinese market. But what that means is mines on the ground in our communities, and there are five major projects planned for northwest Victoria and Gippsland.
Oh, that's so bizarre. You know, it's funny, you know, I've just been reading a book called Asbestos Nation, and it was an industry that Australia never needed to have, but it was in exactly the same way, with the war and the idea that asbestos was the saviour, fire retardant, absolutely essential to the well-being of the future of the empire. The government and commercial interests went into an unholy alliance to maintain an industry that was actually unnecessary and not economic. It sounds like the same thing to me.
Yeah, it's very similar. I think what's going on is, and this is from our visits up to northwest Victoria, is the people up there, and often they're third or fourth generation farmers. It's an incredibly important cropping zone for things like wheat and lentils and canola, so right through the Wimmera. These people just feel that the system has failed them and that it is geared towards ticking boxes for big companies. A lot of the companies involved are global actors in the mining industry, and there's a lot of hype out there that we need critical minerals mining in order to advance energy transition to use in renewables. But critical minerals are actually used quite widely. But for some reason, a number of anti-renewables, anti-climate campaigners are focusing on what they call, quote, the need for critical minerals as a way to kind of browbeat people into accepting these projects. Whereas in reality, they're digging these ore bodies up for profit, not for community benefit, as is pretty standard with the way multinationals work.
Yeah, it's a gold mine. You know, they think it's like a gold rush.
It is indeed, and it's a new gold rush. And as we're seeing with data centres as well, the minute there's an opportunity for businesses to make big bucks, they want to get community out of the way, and they want to make sure they have governments in their pockets. So you can draw quite a similar analogy to what is happening with data centres, where they're being fast-tracked in some areas and there's resistance to properly kind of legislate to have very robust rules around approval requirements. It's exactly the same here. We do have legislation called the MRSD, which regulates the mining sector in Victoria. But there is, as I mentioned before, a really strong sense that the rules are basically there to allow the mining companies effectively to do what they want. They have to go through a process, but they almost always get what they want as long as the market is strong enough that they can then sell the product. And in the case of critical minerals, there's certainly a product market for it.
And is it like asbestos? Is Australia have a poor quality and lack very much? That was exactly the connection with asbestos for Australia. I mean, we didn't have very good quality asbestos and we didn't have very much of it. Is it the same?
We do have a lot of this product, which is why Australia is really in the limelight at present. And there was just in the last week or so a big announcement on another critical minerals project in Western New South Wales. So it is, in a very real sense, a gold rush scenario happening at present. There's a lot of companies coming in and they're trying to truth it up. But we would say, well, this isn't a new industry and we need to look at what's happened in the past. And in the late 1980s, there were mineral sands mines established up in northwestern Victoria.
That's
and
right.
If you go to them now, they haven't been properly rehabilitated. And the tailings dams contain radioactive materials. So you're having these unrehabilitated mines that 30 years on, people are still not cropping. They're not back on their land because of the damage to the soil and the legacy of radioactive materials. So as with asbestos, as time went on, it was originally seen as, oh, this is the saviour and it's going to be great for all these uses. Very quickly, the negative evidence on workers and on consumers and on the environment started to become apparent. We already know the downside of critical minerals. So particularly the failure of rehabilitation of previous mines. And that's why Friends of the Earth has been calling for a moratorium on all further assessment and approval of critical minerals until we understand what is the long-term cumulative impact of these mines. Because part of the problem is a mine proponent comes forward and they say, we want to do a mine here, and then it's assessed, and then someone might appear right next door and it will be assessed separately. So we're saying, let's just put a pause and let's look at all the projects and let's look at the overall impact of all of these projects on food supply, on environment, on water and on communities before we approve or assess any individual projects anymore.
It's interesting because it sounds like the permission of the Paul Keating's Banana Republic, or Malcolm Fraser's Hole in the Ground, because that's the role Australia is supposed to fulfil for getting all the people and the needs of the health of the country.
Yeah, and as we know, there's such a long conversation about the mine economy, that we dig things up and we grow stuff and we export it, and that we have, through neoliberal trade agreements, you know, we got rid of all our manufacturing pretty much over several decades. So we're back into a quarry economy in that we're very reliant on exports. And if you look at it through the lens of food, Australian farmers do export a massive volume of food. I believe the figure is we feed the equivalent of 60 million people around the world by the food we export. So coming back to this industry, you have to say, well, why are we allowing these mines in some of our most productive cropping country? And I think that if you drive across to Adelaide and you go through the Wimmera, it's fairly dry, it's fairly flat, it doesn't look like a super impressive farming country, but it is actually very significant in terms of cropping, as I mentioned before, lentils, canola, wheat and things like that, which are, you know, core aspects of what we need to live and also what we need to export. So if we're thinking long term and if we're trying to move away from this quarry economy notion, why would we allow extractive open cut mining in really significant food producing areas? It goes against our national interests, and it certainly goes against long term environmental sustainability.
And the farmers, they obviously, as you said, they feel that like they've been sidelined. You're talking about the same level of a pushback from farming communities that happened when there was the idea that the big saviour was fracking.
Absolutely. It feels really like the fracking campaign. We spent, gosh, almost 8 years working on the anti-fracking campaign in Victoria. And as people will know, we won that because progressive people were willing to work with conservative people. We all came out of our corners. We collaborated. We found common cause, and we built a massive campaign. And in the end, no parties could pretend it wasn't happening. So the Greens and the ALP, through to the coalition, through to the Nationals, came on board and supported the campaign. But that was a very particular form of organising, which is the willingness to a degree, leave the politics at the door and just to be in the room together and work with each other. And that's what we're doing up in the Northwest, is working with people that probably politically aren't our normal allies that we would collaborate with. But we understand that when communities get together, despite their differences, then you can achieve amazing things. And we're also looking, of course, more broadly at the rise of the right and One Nation and what's happening there. And we're interested in working in communities where One Nation is getting a lot of traction and kind of just building solidarity. And once you have connection with people, you're more able to challenge really regressive politics and reactionary politics.
It's really important for people in urban areas to go out into the rural areas to understand what's going on really in this sort of space.
Yes, it is. And there's another big mineral sands project in East Gippsland, basically right next to the Mitchell River.
Oh my goodness.
A place called Glen Allerdale, and it produces a lot of the vegetables that we consume in Melbourne. And it's just insane that this incredibly good alluvial soil that has been put there over, you know, millions of years through water coming out of the mountains into Gippsland, heading towards Bass Strait, that we would put that at risk. And that's currently going through assessment at present. That's been fought by local communities for many, many years now. They thought they'd won, and it's just come back, and it's just been announced there'll be a new scoping process. So, yeah, we just, you know, what is it? The vigilance is the price of freedom. These companies, they just keep coming back. So
zombies.
The community just needs to stay strong. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're asking people to, you've got some practical steps for people to partake in the pushback?
Yes, indeed. So we're asking people to sign on to a letter which is calling for a moratorium on all assessments of critical minerals projects until there has been an independent cumulative impact assessment. That is, until there's been a state investigation into what will all of these projects do to our communities and to our economy. So stop approving them in a piecemeal fashion. Step back and have a look at the big picture. People can just do a web search for Friends of the Earth Melbourne Critical Minerals and you'll find the moratorium page. Would be great if you'd sign it, would be great if you'd share it. And then we're asking people to contact their local candidates and say, you know, we've got a state election coming, everyone's focused on policy, will you support the moratorium? So we're asking for these two key steps for people to take.
And just as an aside before we let you go, Friends of the Earth is also part of citizen scientists events looking into the Australia's high country and the location of snow gums and their health.
Yes, we are. So if you've ever been to the mountains in Victoria, you'll know the snow gums, beautiful trees. They are. They're unique. They're so special. There's no mountains like it anywhere else in the world because eucalypts basically are found here in Australia. Unfortunately, they are starting to collapse, and that's because climate change is making our summers hotter and drier, which means more frequent and intense fires. And it's also driving a thing called dieback, which is caused by a native beetle, but the dieback is getting worse because the winters aren't as cold and the trees are more water-stressed in summer. So we're concerned that we're seeing localised collapse, and what that means is the trees die, they don't grow back, and they're replaced with just grass and shrubs. So we're losing this ecosystem in front of our very eyes. So we have organised what we're calling citizen science surveys through the month of August, and they're happening wherever snow gums exist. So there's little populations on the Mornington Peninsula, there's some in Mount Macedon, but mostly it's up in the higher mountains from Mount Baulbaw, basically up to Canberra. And we would welcome people joining these surveys to assess the health of the trees to help us better understand the state of the overall community. And again, do a web search for Friends of the Earth Melbourne snow gum surveys and you'll find all the details.
And they can even have some entertainment. They can go to the Mount Hotham during the Australia Backcountry Festival on August the 29th and 30th and enjoy themselves as well as count.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful environment up there in the mountains. It is quite unique. And, yeah, we like to assist people to get out and enjoy it. So people should have a look at the website if they're interested and perhaps get along to one of the surveys.
Thanks very much for talking to us today, Cam.
Thanks, Annie. Bye-bye.
Don't tell me I got away from you this time. Don't tell me I made it through. Don't tell me I got away from you. When I go to sleep, I dream of you. Maybe you're original, maybe you just talk yourself up. Better with you. tell me I got away from me when I go to sleep. I dream of how my life would be better with you. Would be better.
This is Birrigan from Woolagan, coming live from the occupied territories of Goombanga Country, Nambucca Heads, New South Wales. You're listening to 3CR Radical Radio.
A weak solidarity brekkie team listener when we know the caring business class has nothing but the common interest, the common good in everything it says and does, would never resort to, say, hyperbole when it sees a threat to the common good. Almost exclusively threats like a new tax, business cost or worse, concessions to the evil unions who in turn represent the common bad. So when the Property Profits Council, itself a good, not evil union, alerts us that Victoria's work from home bill will, quote, bomb us back to the Stone Age, they really said that, listener, we have to take notice. Back to the Stone Age. From something that appears so innocent. Whether the government heeds their timely warning is a moot point, based on the response from new state socialist supremo Ben Carr-Roll Jacinta. This was a commitment to workers, Ben explained. But I support our caring businesses too. So, Ben, which one is it? Sorry, I don't follow. Just as ideologically clear, big economic guru Jim Chalmers' Capital, we recall, last year he conceded we needed to make housing more affordable. Not by anything as irresponsible as public housing, because Jim knows the answer to the housing crisis lies with the private sector, but by, well, he wasn't sure, but in his budget speech he boasted his changes would lead to lower house prices, but now, as the same property profits lot complain about falling prices, Jim predicted this week, property prices will grow over the next couple of years. Well, that didn't take a giant mind. They always do, even as the property profits lot predict gloom and doom. But, Jim, last year you said you wanted prices to fall, housing to be more affordable. Exactly. Now you want prices to rise, housing to become even more unaffordable. Exactly. So which one is it? Sorry, I don't follow. Good news following a report on this segment last week when we mentioned resource giant Rio Tinto the Planet had announced a record $9.5 billion True Blue Aussie profit, and Jim and Big Supremo Anthony Albanese were approaching the New South Wales Socialist Government, Chris Mingee, to join it in providing a little corporate welfare for Rio Tinto's Tomago Aluminium Smelter. Yes, good news this week, Anthony and Jim and Chris stitched up the deal and handed $2.5 billion to Rio Tinto, and better good news yesterday that the federal contribution is open-minded and may end up an even higher if aluminium prices fall or power ends up more expensive than expected. Silly that record profits Rio Tinto should foot the bill. Oh, and let's hope the socialists succeed in making those huge cuts, essential cuts to services for people with disabilities, which we simply can't afford. They released a list of the big end-of-town law firms which have managed a bit of government work in the past year. Not sure the list is comprehensive, but it totals 280 million, including Gilbert and Tobin picking up 7.5 million to assist the His Most Gracious Majesty's con mission into evil Palestine non-land, non-people rallies and social cohesion. And can't help wondering, for what do we pay the Solicitor General's office? Still, all that explains why, apart from unaffordable disability services, we have no choice but to maintain the unemployed and social security recipients generally in a state of sub-sub-poverty. But we do thank them for their patriotism, their contribution to keeping inflation down a bit. Although the Reserve Losses Bank does tell us there aren't quite enough unemployed whooping it up on, or let's be honest, bludging on their sub-sub-property interest rates, and may yet have to rise, Supremo Michelle Bulldust saged, unless more workers display their patriotism and join the bludgers, or those who refuse such patriotism at least take a cut in wages and conditions, because the wise heads who understand these things know the caring business class increasing its prices has absolutely nothing to do with inflation. The only relevant price is the price of labour. And our old mate in us, Will Cost, the workers of the Troubler Aussie Industry Profits Group, joined the chorus of those who comprehend the delicate flower that is the economy, those same wise practitioners, in pointing out the absolute injustice, back to the Stone Ages again, by the sound of it, thanks to Jim and Anthony's changes to trusts, the main change that they should just maybe pay some tax. This would affect 494,000 businesses in a scuffed, which will have to pay thousands to restructure their arrangements. Restructure? Why do they need to restructure it? Well, clearly they have to avoid this crippling tax. Clearly. Like our junior minister for being offensive and train-killing Pat Military Convoy was clear. US of the UN of the US of the world train killer submarines would end their rotation through Western Troubler Aussie in 5 years. Not quite so clear, as the US of set him straight. We're here to stay, it ordered us, leading Pat to clear up what he thought was clear. They're here to stay, he apologised to the Pentagon. Now, if we didn't know the US of Big Supremo, and particularly the present incumbent Donald Trump of the poor, would never tell a lie, we could be a bit confused as Donald, on his appropriately named Truth Social, said the US of has a massive amounts of munitions, large amounts are being manufactured, largest ever, ever. Yet the Pentagon has asked the merchants of death to escalate their production rapidly because of an acute shortage of things that kill people after thousands and thousands of missiles haven't ended the Donald and his very, very close friend, Zion Supremo Benjamin, not another Yahoo's invasion of evil Iran, their major contribution being stuffing up the world's capitalist economy, although Benjamin was forced to set Donald straight after Donald proposed a limited end to the slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation of the non-land, non-people in Gaza. Donald, the man of peace, making it even more surprising the Pentagon is running low on merchants of death merchandise. Just as the US pointed out, it is here to stay in Troubler Aussie, Benjamin pointed out Zion is here to stay in the non-land, non-peoples, non-land. Indeed, in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and of course, the West Bank. As Donald oscillates minute by minute between bombing evil Iran into the Stone Age and they are desperate to make a deal, the train killer success was highlighted not only by the call for more merchants of death merchandise, despite the Truth Social massive missive, the trained killer leadership has asked the working class cannon fodder trained killers for ideas on how they can fight the invasion that Donald and Benjamin assured us would be over in a few days. Nobel Prize material to join Donald's well-deserved FIFA Peace Prize. We assume FIFA will now award a Peace Prize every year. On gifts back here, perhaps Anthony should be reminded of never look a gift horse in the, even if in this case it was a couple of melons in the mouth. As the media scrum and opposition lots are falling over themselves with probably appropriate but certainly hypocritical excitement. Yes, what's going on, Anthony? It's sour grapes. Wonder if he'd be rushing to be interviewed by the same woman whose name I can't quite recall, but who herself must surely pick up some award for feminist solidarity. Not quite solidarity as the good ship KPMG heads for the treacherous waters of a Senate grilling into misusing client information and persecuting the whistleblower who whistleblew. Many of the rats are leaping off the sinking as more evidence exposes the memory lapses the leapers suffered last time they were grilled. And as Swiss coal behemoth Glenn Rotten to the Core prepares to launch on the Trublet Aussie Stock Exchange, announcing its belief in the brilliant future of coal, if not in the future of Mother Earth. Interesting, a round table in Washington last week when South Trublet Aussie Supremo Peter Melvin asked us it's yours was in town, data centre industry heavies and Pete discussing opportunities and challenges with just one spot for a data centre opponent, a woman called Elena Schlossberg, who, on her hour-long Uber ride to join them, discovered her status had been altered from going to not going. No explanation. A blunder from down under. She emailed her supporters. What an insult to a great True Blue Aussie. Finally, serious ending this week. Last week, the 81st anniversary of the US bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Spencer Street, no longer Spencer Street, fail facts in one of those an age ago columns, reprinted its 1945 report, The Dreadful Consequences of the Nuclear Disaster, The Horror of Hiroshima, and then concluded, Colonel Paul Tibbett, the pilot, described the explosion as tremendous and awe-inspiring. He was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross as he stepped from the plane after returning. Honoured for mass murder and destruction. Good morning.
A Friday rave and Yabai Hi-Fi present Political Rudical, a 3CR Radiothon fundraiser. Join us at Bar 303 on High Street in Northcote on the 22nd of August from 7 p.m. A night of roots and dub music powered by the almighty Yabai Hi-Fi. A lineup of local sound system heavyweights on the decks. Striker D from Hardicle High Power, Joe Dubs from Solidarity Sound System, H and Jack from Goody's Hi-Fi, Lego, Martha, DJ Curly from 3CR's Cultural Kinetics, Degenerator, and Yabai. Hear from Joe Dubs on the politics of sound system, and of course a rave from Jacob and Mercedes. Tickets are $15 and can be found at ra.co by searching Political Rudical, or check out Yabai Hi-Fi and 3CR on Facebook or Instagram. Political Rudical, a 3CR Radiothon fundraiser, 22nd of August from 7 p.m. at Bar 303 in Northcote. There's a tram stop right out the front. A 3CR supporter.
You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Matt. And Matt, you're going to report on the rally that was held at West Footscray rally at Hanson Reserve last Sunday against data centres.
Yeah, that was a rally that started at 2 o'clock. I got there a little bit late, so unfortunately I didn't get to hear the first part of it, where there were experts such as people from Digital Rights Watch speaking about the impacts of the data centre boom, it seems like, in Victoria. But
a little bit like the rare minerals
boom that Cam Walker was talking about. Yeah. And the asbestos boom that you spoke to me earlier on, you're about the book you've been reading at the moment, Asbestos Nation. It seems like a constant theme here, isn't it? But I did get to see the second half of it, where all of the candidates who are running in the state elections gave their take on the data centres. You had Elena Pereira. Apologies, Greens candidate for Footscray. You had Annika Victoria, who was running for Victorian Socialists. We've had Jess Marsh, who's a community independent candidate who's running, as well as Min Kwan Nguyen, who's running for the West Party, as well as the incumbent state MP, Kate Hill, as well as Dr. Daniel Molino, who's the federal MP. I think it's quite interesting that I forgot to mention the upper house MP, that being Dave Cruikshank, Edishank, I should say.
Yeah, David Edishank.
From the Legalized Cannabis Party. I recall he was the actual first candidate to speak, and I found that his oratory was quite impressive.
Yeah.
And straight to the point, and really called out the crux of the issues with the data centres. And I didn't realise until hearing him speak that there's actually already one, this rapid expansion in the western suburbs. There's one active one already in Diggers Rest. Even though it was quite inclement and rainy weather, I estimate there would have been about 150 people at that rally. And a couple of weeks, about 2 weeks before, there was also a community meeting out in Sydenham, which I heard there were 100 people did turn up. And there is going to be another meeting at Footscray, I think on the 20th.
Yeah, the 20th. The
20th of August, which is mentioned in the talk.
Where do you think that would be held?
I've got a feeling it might be the important. I think it might be in a community centre in Footscray. The details escape me at the moment, but what I do remember is that this rally was organised by the Borderlands Collective, as well as Citizens for Tottenham. And just of note, and this caught my attention during the week, the Borderlands Collective are running an event. I think on the last Saturday in August, around urban planning and livability city issues. So that definitely ties in with data centres.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, let's have a look at the... I mean, we won't hear from David Edertschank. We'll just do a bit of a summary. One of the things that he was talking about was this very iffy investment, that it's like a gold rush, the new gold rush, and it's been called, you know, absolutely essential for the economy of Victoria, except that, of course, the government has been completely untransparent.
No, they haven't. And this is important to note, all of the data centres are actually in Labor seats.
All of them, all of them.
And I was speaking to Annie off air before the program, and The Age had a very extensive article on Tuesday where they spoke to residents that are in the Camberfield area, just near Barry Road, where the former Ford factory is. They knew nothing about the planning application. I understand there was just a 2-week turnaround time to put in a submission. I actually had, after the speeches ended, the rally then walked up to the data centre, which is only about a 15 to 20 minute walk. I've never been in that part of the West before, but this data centre is smack in the middle of a residential area. There are homes abutted both ends. I note that even though it's under construction, it seems to be somewhat operational. I note that I observed that there were lights in the offices. I did observe two employees going to the centre. I did walk around and I note that I could hear like machinery or humming noises. To me, that might indicate possibly data servers operating. There were six quite large water tanks adjoined to the data centre. So perhaps that might be to extract wastewater. And it just so happened that I spoke to some women that were around there, and they went from the area, but they went to go check it out. And they said they were actually conducting some field research on the data centers. And this person I spoke to had studied environmental science, and she pointed out to me that kind of like the landscaping features just out the front of the data center looked like as if it was a rainwater type garden set up, as if that it's trying to extract the water. And quite ominously, there is a drone that circulates above the centre. And when I attempted to take a photo, it actually moved. And they moved a couple of times. So, yeah, it's quite disturbing. And I am aware as well that there are possibly plans mooted in Sunbury as well. And in Spotswood, and just check on social media, for example, like the Legalized Cannabis Party. They have been quite active and vocal about this. And I understand there'll be a community meeting in Spotswood. And I suggest other Western suburbs as well, because this seems to be an ongoing thing that's happening.
Well, one of the, because David Etterschank is the Western Metropolitan member, and he pointed out some really interesting things. One of them was that the residents around in certain parts of his area have been trying to get a bus to be able to take them to the train station for years now. If they want to actually get to public transport from where they live, it's a 40-minute walk. They've been trying to do this for years, and the state government has not budged. They have not created a system for locals to get to the public transport.
And right? I'm talking about the West. I'm aware that for well over a decade, for example, around Point Cook, that is an issue.
Yeah,
that
right.
is an issue. Yeah.
But overnight, they can put in data centres without telling anybody about it. And it's not surprising that people are incredibly angry about this.
And the rationale for data centres that politicians are giving doesn't really satisfy critical thinking. They talk about the jobs boom, but
it's only in the building phase.
It's in the building phase.
Talk about rates collection. But it's not on the stuff that's going on in the place.
No.
It's only on the buildings.
And the data centres will only have perhaps 10 to 20 people employed in it. And just think about all the jobs and industries that might be displaced as a result of
AI. Anyway, we've got a couple of the speakers. So we might hear from Katie Hall, who's the incumbent, and Dan Molino, who was they were there hoping to assuage people's fears.
Well, first up is Katie Hall, who's going to be with Dan Molino. Hello, Dan.
Thank you very much. Thanks to Jackie for inviting me to be here today on behalf of citizens of Tottenham. And I asked Dan, our federal MP, to come along too, because I think it's really important that both levels of government hear your perspective. I want to be clear that I do not support the expansion of the next DC data centre. I have written to the Minister for Planning and I have met with her to discuss our community's concerns. I also share your concerns around energy consumption, water, air quality, ambient noise. And I have concerns that we don't have the guardrails in place that we need. We don't have the regulatory environment we need in place. And I support the ACTU's really important work around worker protection and also the need for sovereign AI capacity. I this week had a discussion with the new Premier, Ben Carroll, and expressed this view that I want to pause on data centre construction until we have the regulatory environment in place and the legislative framework in place to ensure that communities are protected, that AI progresses in a way that puts people and workers first. And I think there is a lot more work to be done in this space. I've also flagged that I don't like the development facilitation process being utilised for data centres. So that's my perspective. As your local MP, I will continue to advocate on your behalf. And just wanted to share that I'd had a really heartening discussion with the Premier this week. You would have heard him on radio saying that he thinks AI is off the leash. And he agreed with me that we need guardrails in place. He's been public about that. And thankfully, I think the appointment of a minister to deal with this is a really good first step.
Well, thanks. Look, I just wanted to say I'm here with Katie. I'm the federal local member, and I just wanted to say I'm here as a local member, but also just wanted to outline a couple of things that are happening at the national level. Look, as a local member, I hear what you're saying loud and clear, and it's a huge gathering today. I think that we need to put the brakes on this development, and we need. I'll work with Katie very closely some of the planning issues that are being worked through now are state issues, but I'll work very closely with her in advocating on the concerns that you're raising. I just wanted to very briefly say that the PM spoke a couple of weeks ago on AI and data centres and reflected the fact that this has really changed and that we are now leaning in a lot more, and I think in a way that is different to just about any other government around the world. We're now basically going to set up national guidelines to say that new data centres have to put their own energy into the grid, it has to be renewable, and they have to pay for their own connection. We've also said there's got to be water management control. So at the national level, we're really leaning in. And it's not directly related to data centres, but I just wanted to add that there are other related issues. This week we're bringing in legislation to force big tech to pay media for the news they use. So we're trying to bring in legislation on a range of fronts when it comes to big tech, and that'll be world-leading regulation. So thanks for the chance to be here, and I definitely hear your concerns.
Well, there you go. Nice words. Apparently, Kate Hall doesn't like the facilitation process,
and
she's concerned.
And she talked about sovereign AI capacity. I mean, what does that mean? Because all the technology is owned by US technocrats, so there is no ownership there. And I think an interesting side note. The governor of the Reserve Bank on Wednesday, not only did she talk about interest rate policy, she actually called out data centers, and she actually suggested that the federal government's policy about building housing, there's actually labor shortages in the building construction industry because of the building of data centers. So I think that's something interesting that the Reserve Bank governor said there.
I think the big bill might have something to do with it. This is what Helena Pereira from the Greens, who's a candidate for the Greens.
My name is Helena Pereira, and I'm, the Greens candidate for Footscray. And actually, maybe surprisingly or unsurprisingly enough, the data centre is actually part of that reason, to be honest, because I'm wearing a shirt that says 3012, and that's because it was part of a previous campaign that we ran around that very site to get a better outcome, which has now obviously ended up becoming a data center. And I just wanted to read a little bit of an email that I actually sent back in 2019, and it went to all of our local Labor representatives, including at council. And it said, I would like to make a time to discuss the opportunities for significant improvement for the West, possibly through the development of key strategic sites. There is such a site at West Footscray, 25 to 27 Inglis Street, previously destined to be a development as a factory storage facility, masquerading as an opportunity for jobs and growth. The local community was against the project, but not from an anti-development perspective, NIMBY perspective. He simply recognised that it was an inappropriate site and a position that the market has now validated. The units haven't sold and now the whole block is back on the market. I said, I implore the government to intervene before more inappropriate development proposals are once again pursued for this site. The West Footscray community south of the train line is largely devoid of economic and community facilities. The Tottenham Station train line is a barrier and offers poor local amenity and doesn't foster community gathering and local pride. Many people in the area are passionate community builders and environmentally and socially conscientious. We want the site to contribute to the local and broader region in a meaningful way. We have shared our vision for the site from prior to the previous sale and reaffirm them now. Ideas conducive to a vibrant multi-purpose precinct, worthy of its location, close to a train line, central to the inner west, readily accessible to the CBD, and en route to major regional centres. Ideas for the precinct include series of the west, urban food, meeting spaces, community spaces, a village hub, local access to food, amenities, community spaces, for sport, including recreational facilities, with a link to the West Footscray Community Facilities Plan.
affordable housing, innovative medium density housing pilot. We'd like to discuss this. At the end of the day, we met and we were told the government's not interested, and if you don't like it, you should run for local council or state government. And now, rather than getting all of that possibility, all of the jobs, all of the housing, all of the civic amenity, the inappropriate development that we foreshadowed has come to pass, and it's an enormous data centre. The new housing activity centres are limited to north of the tracks. The legislation is absent, the strategy is absent, and we are once again being left behind. And the community knew what we wanted, we knew what we needed. All of those things would have been immensely beneficial to the local community and to the broader region. And instead, we're left with a data centre and promises that now it's going to be worked on, now the legislation will be worked on, now a strategy will be developed. It's too late. The community told you what we wanted, we told you what we needed years ago, when the site was for sale for a price that the government absolutely could have bought, they could have developed housing. Now that it's limited to north of the tracks, it's the new housing activity centres, it's abundantly clear that the government has no freaking idea what to do with this region south of the tracks, and that's not good enough. If you're in government, you should have a fucking plan. So that's why I'm running, because I'm here to represent the community, because the community knows what they need, and all they need is someone to listen and represent them in Parliament.
So that was the Greens candidate. We haven't got enough time to have the Socialist candidate and the other candidate, the smaller pieces. But Annika was pushing the notion that, in fact, her past experience, where she used to live as a child, against a tip that caused poisonous...
I remember she said her sister was born with a cleft palate.
Because of the connection of bad planning next to residential areas. And that was one of the reasons for why it was so important for a community candidate like the Socialists to be putting their hands up in that area. And we're going to go out with Jess Marsh. She was a community independent.
I'm running as a community independent candidate for the seat of Footscray. My name's Jess Marsh. I live just down the road with my family. I'm not against technology or business. I think these things are necessary. But once again, it feels like the Inner West is being asked to carry the burden of Melbourne's growth. For decades, we've lived with trucks rumbling past our houses. We've fought for cleaner air. We've fought to filter the Westgate tunnel stacks. And now, enormous industrial facilities are being built and expanded right alongside homes, schools and kindergartens. Government decisions are being made without adequate consultation and without proper impact assessments. That is not good enough. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
These facilities use enormous amounts of electricity. Residents of Tottenham and West Footscray have raised concerns about noise, light, diesel emissions, urban heat, water use and impacts on our electricity infrastructure. Just this week, huge industrial power poles were installed on quiet residential streets in Yarraville without proper notice. Residents were informed that their power poles were being replaced. They weren't informed what was going up. And there's a bigger conversation here too. AI has enormous potential, but we should be asking who controls it, who profits from it, and who carries the cost. Right now, some of the most powerful corporations in the world are racing to build infrastructure that will underpin the AI economy. Technology is moving incredibly quickly. Regulation and democratic oversight are struggling to keep up, or they're just simply not keeping up. We should not simply hand enormous corporations the power to determine what this transition looks like, and then ask communities like ours to deal with the consequences. Innovation without accountability is not progress. Government has a responsibility to set the rules in the public interest, not in the interests of multinational corporations and vested interests. Government has a responsibility to protect our environment and our climate, to protect workers and communities, to make sure public infrastructure is not simply captured for private profit. And communities like ours deserve a voice in those decisions. Right now, we're seeing the state government passing the buck to council. Council has had and still has a role, but the fast track process sits with the state government. The former premier set the tone, pledging to be ruthless in fast tracking approvals for data centres. So today I'm calling for three things. First, no more blank checks for fast track data centres in the Inner West. Second, genuine community consultation before decisions are made, particularly with regard to where these sorts of facilities are located. And right now, next to kindergartens and schools and playgrounds is not the place. And third, if billion-dollar companies want to build infrastructure here, they should be expected to contribute to the community.
Yes.
Cool. New data centres should bring additional renewable energy into the system, minimise their environmental footprint and deliver real tangible benefits for local communities. Right now that's not happening, and that's why I support the moratorium, the call for the moratorium. The West is not anti-development. It's not anti-technology. And we're certainly not anti-progress, but growth is inevitable. Poor planning is not.
Yes.
Technological change seems inevitable too, but handing corporations unchecked power over how that happens is a political choice. The Inner West helped build Melbourne. We've carried its trucks, its industry and its pollution for generations. We should not now become the convenient place to put the next generation of industrial infrastructure simply because the governments think nobody here will make enough noise. So, judging by the crowd here today, I think they may have miscalculated. We want progress, but progress that makes our community healthier, cleaner and stronger. Technology should serve people, not the other way around.
And that's it for Solidarity Breakfast this morning. The data centre fight is not over. We've got quite a few different events. Anti-racism rally, 12 p.m. Sunday, 16th, Dandenong outside the market on the corner of Clow and Cleveland Street, if you're around at that place. Don't forget the Lost in Science trivia night on Monday. Defend unions, defend the CFMEU event workshop and panel. What can the 1986 nurses strike teach us today? That's on the 22nd. Of August at 2 p.m. at Ballumbellum, that's in Brunswick. And don't forget the annual Green Left comedy debate on the 22nd as well at 6:30 p.m. at the Brunswick Town Hall.
I've got an update in the data centre event I mentioned previously. This Wednesday evening between 6 and 9 p.m. down at Footscray Community Arts Basement Theatre is a free event. Is the data centre's open mic. Go there to find out some more information. And this might be an issue we might give a bit further coverage as well.
Everybody should be aware of it. Yeah. It's our future. Coming up next is Asia Pacific Currents, and we'll go out with 1,000 Kisses by Brooke Taylor.
The ebbs and flows that come and go, they're just around the corners that you never know. One step forward, two steps back, the hurry up and wait for a love that'll last. If patience is a virtue, and I'm so to behold, 'cause good things come to those who wait. At least that's what I was told. Now I know. Give 1,000 kisses, baby. Take 1,000 smiles. Take 1,000 inches, babe. I'll give 1,000 miles.
coincidence when circumstance and stars align. 'Cause you hit me like a lightning bolt and shook me to the core. My heart beating like thunder, like it's never comes before. So now I'm sure. Give a thousand.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.